What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Healthspan Academy. I'm your host, Craig Sheerhart, and joining me today is my special guest, Carl Bailey. Carl started his athletics. He trained and competed as a gymnast in the Spanish national circuit for over 15 years. He took a national gold medal in the vault, and he's been coaching fitness and gymnastics since 2004. In late 2010, he launched gymnasticsquad.com, which ended up being a huge resource for CrossFit coaches, thousands of coaches kind of worldwide, myself included. And he's coached thousands of athletes worldwide through his freestyle connection seminars. He's coached some high-level CrossFitters, including two-time games champion Annie Thorisdottir. He's the author of Freestyle, and he's the host of the Freestyle Way podcast. And we're going to talk all things fitness and gymnastics today. Carl, thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It's great hearing the intro there and the bio. And I realize that it needs an update, I guess. It was accurate.
Cool. Yeah. Pulled LinkedIn, hopefully. Got us close. Anyways.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah. So let's talk about how your journey in fitness began, your athletics kind of growing up. Was gymnastics big in the household? Was it just kind of something you stumbled upon? Was it thrust upon you? What was that like early days?
Yeah, my mother put me into gymnastics part of a after school program. And one of the reasons she did that was because my dad was a gymnast growing up. So gymnastics was kind of present, but yeah, it wasn't a thing that we necessarily talked about or watched. And plus, I was 5-6 years old, so it wasn't something that I was conscious of. Yeah. But I do remember when I got into gymnastics that my mother kind of prepped me for what was going to happen. And she said, you're going to go into this gym and there are going to be some mats and you're going to be rolling around the floor and it's going to be like playing at home.
Sounds amazing. And
in other words, what she was really saying was that it's going to be like what you do here and what you enjoy doing.
Yeah.
So I do remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. That's cool. Yeah. So who were your, and then I guess fast forwarding into when you started coaching and getting more serious in athletics, who were the first mentors for you in kind of the world of fitness and mobility?
You know, when I think about mentors, of course, the one that stands out the most within the fitness CrossFit space was Kelly Starrett, who took me in as a member at his gym, San Francisco CrossFit, in the early days. And then eventually I ended up working there as one of the coaches and creating content alongside him.
Yeah, I remember watching those YouTube videos in the early days. That's kind of how I stumbled upon both of you guys, actually. Yeah.
So crazy. Yeah. It's wild to think back on those days. So yeah, Kelly was a huge mentor.
Yeah.
But I must say that my clients that I had when I was doing personal training were my mentors. They came from various backgrounds. And one of the things that happens in personal training is that you don't achieve necessarily the best physical results because you end up talking and engaging in conversation more than training. This is something that just eventually happens if you're with somebody long enough.
Yeah,
you just plateau and you become friends.
Yeah.
But what ends up happening is that those who hire you, especially if you are positioned in a way where you maybe say you're a subject matter expert, they end up guiding you towards new ways of looking at the world from business development, branding, communication, and new ideas. They express what their needs are, and you get to mold your career accordingly. So I would say that every single personal training client that I had in the early days, and this is 2004 through 2010, those were, I would say, my first mentors.
That's cool. And I feel like Kelly was before his time in terms of like the whole YouTube and I don't know, it's just everywhere. It's like the staple. And I feel like he's kind of been part of the template yourself as well, kind of putting those videos together early on. That's super cool.
Yeah. Kelly Starrett was, amazing. I mean, I remember he told me we went on a trip. I got to shadow him. We went to Seattle. And when we got back from this trip, he said, I'm considering the same way I write a blog on our homepage or on our San Francisco CrossFit page. I think I'm going to do one for mobility every single day, but I'm going to do it in a slightly different format.
Yeah.
The next day, he bought the first iPhone, the 3GS, I guess really? It was called. And yeah. on that, he filmed the first Mobility Wad video. And this is how far ahead he was. He filmed it, I believe, in a vertical format.
Oh, really?
before vertical was yeah. was even a thing. And I think that's the one that went up on YouTube. Huh. I may be mistaken in just imagining things. So somebody's going to have to fact check me.
No, that's fair. That's crazy. So, over the years, obviously you've worked with like a huge range of athletes and coaches. Like who do you remember being most excited to work with in the early days?
You know, when I think about who I was the most excited to work with, I want to say it was Andy Thor's daughter because yeah. it was my chance to see what the top of the field looked like.
Yeah.
But the one that I got a lot from and I continue to fall back on was working with Chris Stoudy, who is an adaptive athlete. He founded WheelWad.
Right.
And he's a two-time Olympian in wheelchair basketball.
Yeah, yeah.
And working with him was very insightful. He actually attended one of my seminars. And at the end of the seminar...
He's Canadian, is he not?
Canadian, yeah.
Yeah, he's from Barrie area, if I remember.
I think he's like north of Toronto, but I forget what it's... Collingwood, maybe it's called?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
He was amazing. And I just remember at the end of my seminar, my seminar is not designed for the adaptive athlete,
right.
but we had already discussed this.
Yeah.
But at the end of the seminar, I went up to him and I said, I just feel like there's so much more we can do. And I would love to support you, work with you, learn from you.
Yeah.
And he was so open and so willing that he allowed me to, in a very safe environment, work with him and his body in a way that I've never been able to do before. And
that's
that amazing. Led to working with a fair amount of adaptive athletes and them really showing me that we are all adaptive. We just need to learn where we are adaptive, and that's where the work begins. So I would say he was probably the biggest influence on my coaching career.
That's amazing. Yeah, I saw that you mentioned him in the book. And the book, I want to chat a little bit about the book. And I think that kind of is a nice segue into the concept of freestyle. You have like a definition of that. And I think like you kind of alluded to us all being adaptive. We have to adapt to whatever level we're at and our strengths and weaknesses and the whole bit. Talk about the premise of the book. What was your sort of scope going into that project?
Yeah, the book opportunity actually came because Kelly Starrett had gotten a book deal, and his co-author Glenn Cardoza was there shooting pictures with him, and I was modeling, we could call it, for the book. And Kelly told Glenn, who worked with the publishing house, which is Victory Belt, said, "Hey, you guys need to give him a book deal too. Carl needs to write a book."
Yeah.
And I was like, "I'm not ready. I don't know what you're talking about, but I'm not ready." But they were excited. And of course, I was excited. I was very naive. And I was just like, "Yeah, let's do a book. I got this." And when I got the book deal, at first, it was intended to have me talk about gymnastics.
Yeah.
And I realized that when I was talking about gymnastics in writing, I didn't love it. I just wasn't excited about it. I couldn't find my voice through gymnastics. It didn't feel relevant to what I was doing at the time.
Yeah.
So I thought, you know, maybe I can talk about CrossFit. And as soon as I brought that up, they said, no CrossFit. that's going to come with some legal repercussions.
Yeah.
You would have to call it functional fitness. And when I just heard that, I thought, that's kind of boring.
Yeah.
And anyways, I thankfully had this amazing co-author who now I consider a close and good friend, Anthony Sherbandi, Tony, who was actually one of my clients.
He
was one of the people that I worked with. And he was a PhD student in neuroscience at Stanford. And we had always discussed the opportunity of writing articles around movement and the brain.
Yeah.
And this never happened, But when I got the opportunity to write the book, the publishing house basically said, you need a co-author because your writing skills are shit. So I don't know if I can swear here, but basically that's what they said. I want to believe that my writing skills have improved a little bit, but yeah. they were right. So I approached Tony and I said, Tony, any chance you would like to work together? And he said, I would love to. This would be an amazing project to do. And we've been talking about writing for a while together. Yeah. So this could be it. This could be the channel. Cool. And we wrote for 3 years.
Wow.
With no direction. It was just trying to get something out.
Right.
And one day we decided to quit. And the day we decided to quit, we also decided to start a new project. And this new project was creating an app.
Okay.
So we wanted to have an app that would function on iPad, and it would be an app that served as a playbook and a guideline for my seminar.
Oh, cool.
And that day we got together to write, and within 3 hours, we wrote the framework for this app. We wrote all the content. We plugged in all that which we had been writing for 3 years, and all of a sudden we had a book. And the next
That's
day,
amazing.
Yeah, the next day, Tony called me and he said, Carl, this is the book. And I said, I feel it too. And he said, you know what I think you should call it? You should just call it what you call the seminar, which is Freestyle Connection.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, let's do that. And he said, maybe even simpler, just call it Freestyle.
Yeah.
And that's how it happened. I didn't even come up with the title. He just did. He just said, take what is already there, Carl, cool. and show the world. So nice. That's what we did. And then within 8 months, we got the book done.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was the birth of Freestyle.
Yeah. I feel like the first book never is a linear path. It's just like, and I wrote a book last year. It was the same deal. I co-authored with my colleague.
Oh, nice.
Chiropractor. And it was like,
what's it called?
It's called Optimized Modern Man's like roadmap to living younger.
I love it.
So it's just like on longevity. Yeah.
Cool. I need it. I'm turning 40 right now. So I'm feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah. I felt 40 for sure. That was fun.
I think it's more mental than anything else, but yeah.
For sure. Cool. Yeah. That was like similar thing. It was like, and there's, when is it done? That's the other question, right? There's always stuff you could put in. There's like more research you want to put in and you find out new stuff. I got to put this in. We just had to cut ourselves off and then I sent it to my partner to edit it. And then all of a sudden there's hundreds of more revisions. Send it to
That's the part that people don't.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the part that people don't see, that the revisions are insane. So you eventually have to just say, okay, enough is enough. Let's just end here. We know we're falling short, but at least we got something out.
Yeah, exactly. Cool. Well, it's a cool book, and there's a few things I want to touch on a little bit, and you kind of allude to the aesthetic gymnastics versus functional gymnastics, and I know there's some fundamental differences, and I think like sometimes that stuff gets mixed and intertwined together because there's an aesthetic way to do things and there's a functional way, and now that you have the experience in both, talk about some of those fundamental differences in where you would do things just for the appearance when you're competing versus what's a more efficient way to do it maybe competitively.
Yeah, the aesthetic part is more of a cultural thing.
Yeah.
So it's part of the signature of a craft or a sport. And it's just kind of the, in basketball, it's the flick of the wrist.
Yeah.
It's hold that, that's
the
basketball.
The hold is the style points, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's the style points.
Yeah.
Football has the same thing, the way you stand, the way you sit around, the way you talk to each other.
Yeah.
These are signature movements, positions that are aesthetic.
Mm-hmm.
And the sport of gymnastics is actually called artistic gymnastics.
Yeah, that's right.
Which means that it's a creative expression of the body within a context of a way of doing things, a sport that has some rules and regulations and standards.
Mm-hmm.
So the aesthetics is part of the presentation, is part of the artistic expression of the body.
Mm-hmm.
The functionality of it is simply the accomplishment of the task.
Right.
And functionality can have various expressions.
Mm-hmm.
It can be very diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And as long as it is safe, useful, and long-lasting, meaning safe that you can come in and come out of it without being harmed, useful, meaning that it serves a purpose, it has utility, and that it is lasting, meaning that it's sustainable,
mm-hmm.
viable, then you have something that is truly functional. And right. this is something that is constantly changing. Just yeah. if we think about our bodies aging, right. As we age, as we change, as we adapt, the way that we function slightly changes.
True. Yeah.
One of my goals is to age gracefully. And yeah. this is something that you probably wrote about in your book and you allude to.
Yeah, it's a great topic for this podcast.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. And this concept of aging gracefully is when you are able to be functional, yet express yourself in an original way. Mm-hmm. And this original way of expression, your signature presence, presentation, is the aesthetic part of it.
Yeah. So, and,
yeah.
Oh, sorry,
I mean,
go ahead.
Yeah, go. Yeah. There's so much more I can go for days. So feel free to ask. And
yeah, I was just going to ask about some specifics. Like, are there movements when you sit? I don't know how often you're watching the CrossFit Games these days, but if you sit and watch them compete, do you still see elements that are like, there is no functional reason for it? It's just like they're just hitting aesthetics and they're maybe wasting some energy, or like if you see like muscle ups or like handstand pushups, is there, do you kind of like, do you ever find yourself cringing? You're like, that's not the most efficient way to do that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Every time I see something that is not there yet, I'm almost like, okay, let's go back to CrossFit. You can give them something, but
yeah,
they're on their way. They got it. That they don't need me. I'm a knucklehead. Yeah. yeah. There's not much more for me to do in that space. When it comes to the physical, mm-hmm. there are certain things that can be cleaned up. I do believe yeah. that. Yeah. I do believe the sport is still evolving. The practice mm-hmm. is still evolving.
Yeah.
And some things are best left alone. Meaning it's best to let it transform in a way that is self-regulating.
Right.
Just and that's a little bit where I stand right now.
Yeah.
Exactly. Fair enough. I'm not saying that I have the solutions. In fact, some of the things that I may be thinking about may be limiting.
Yeah.
So it would actually be detrimental to the yeah. practice.
Yeah, fair enough.
And the evolution.
Yeah.
So yeah, I definitely see that. That being said, it's important to realize that function leads to aesthetics and aesthetics leads to new function.
Right. Yeah, that's
and,
interesting.
Yeah, and here it's important to realize also how a standard is created. And mm-hmm. I believe that a standard is created through three attributes. One, a mechanical one, a biomechanical one. Mm-hmm. Two, an aesthetic one, like mm-hmm. we just addressed. And then three, through rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you think about it, something that is mechanically sound tends to be aesthetically appealing.
True. Yeah.
When something is mechanically sound and aesthetically appealing, it fits within a standard.
Right.
It follows a certain set of rules.
Yeah.
True. Usually enough. A sport is that which, when expressed at the highest level, is mechanically sound, aesthetically cool and appealing, and follows the rules to the best of its capacities.
Yeah, true enough.
Now, with CrossFit, what I found when I came in was that signature movements were being created. Mm-hmm. Kettlebell swings overhead.
Yeah.
That's one. Thrusters.
Yeah.
Muscle ups. Mm-hmm. Butterfly pull-ups.
Yeah.
These are all signature movements that have come from CrossFit. Kipping handstand push-ups.
Yeah.
Burpees in a specific manner.
Yeah, and you're seeing even crazier stuff in like the grid league, like their toes to bar, muscle up, chest to bar, like combinations and all that stuff. It's wild.
Yeah, and yeah. I do believe that there are certain things that like go a little bit too far.
Yeah,
and the grid league could be one of those. But yeah. whatever, you do what you have to do to be interesting.
Yeah, true enough.
And I'm not putting the grid league down. I think it's fantastic. Everybody just go do whatever makes you happy and feels good, and
yeah, they're incredible the athletes. You can't take that away from them. They're absolutely
insane.
Yeah,
insane. I love it.
Yeah,
I love it.
Yeah,
I just can't help to laugh because I know that I've been part of trying sometimes a little bit too hard.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah,
I guess, but you need
there's only
to
so
do
many
that
ways
in order to explore new ways.
Yeah, true. And I mean, as a sport, you kind of have to keep like, I mean, just as the CrossFit Games has evolved, there you need to keep finding new tests to find new ways to take that fitness to the next level.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about progressions. So just in my own kind of coaching life, I try to keep athletes keeping a rotation of progressions, whatever kind of like progression they're working towards. Because I find people fall into their comfort zones. You know, they find a scale option that they're comfortable with, and that's just their go-to in classes. Do you, when you're helping an athlete get through, is that something you've struggled with as a coach in the past, is getting people to kind of buy into multiple ways to scale options and get them out of their comfort zone as they're working through progressions?
I've personally never had a problem with it. This may sound strange, because I've never had an agenda
right.
of having to control my athletes
right.
or even that. Do you hear that? That language is actually incorrect. When I say my athletes, that's the ego speaking.
Yeah, true.
I've never had an agenda or need for controlling the person that I'm working with.
Hmm. Interesting.
And I think that's where the magic really happens.
Yeah, true enough.
I'm not there to create the vision for you or even create the progression.
Mm-hmm.
I'm there to extract what is alive in you in a way that can best express itself right now in this moment and get you where you need to go.
Right.
And if I can do that, then we're good. And that is built through trust.
Mm-hmm.
And trust is one, demonstrating competence.
Mm-hmm.
As long as I could demonstrate that which I was presenting, whether it felt like or looked like a regression, a scaled version of the ultimate performance that was being pursued, then the person that I'm working with would always adapt to it. So trust is very important, and competence is key. The other thing is consistency.
Yeah.
Is demonstrating a level of progression that is ongoing, where there's a consistent practice. And mm-hmm. and what is this? This is the essence of mastery.
Right.
Which is not a destination, but just a path that you're walking through.
Yeah, true enough.
And in addition to that, having integrity. And integrity is not just presented through competence, but through your values and your principles. And here, always prefacing with, this is my current level of understanding. There may be more. Thus, what I'm saying today may be wrong tomorrow.
Yeah, true.
That integrity right there allows the person that you're working with to take ownership of the practice itself, of the guidance, of the relationship with the coach.
For sure.
And when you do that, what ends up happening is that it leads to a bond
mm-hmm.
where the roles that are assumed, coach and athlete, are fully embodied.
Yeah.
And
both,
when you do
both
that,
feeling a sense of ownership.
Exactly. Yeah. Then there's this this sense of connection, and mm-hmm. that connection is built on one, empathy, and two, compassion.
Yeah.
Compassion is being graceful in accepting and respecting, which is the definition of freestyle,
mm-hmm.
the stage, the current stage of development.
Yeah. So it's more of a partnering than what people could think of as coaching is almost like, not dictatorship is probably the wrong word, but more dictatorship than kind of partnering, kind of the other end of the spectrum.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I love that. Let's talk a little bit about the aspect of kipping. I feel like this is the one thing that defines CrossFit and other domains of functional fitness. And, you know, it's been criticized over the years and introduced too quickly. And, you know, there's, you know, some coaches are dead set on you must do strict before you kip and this stuff. Where do you sit on that curve? Do you think is there a prerequisite amount of strength before you introduce kipping, or what's your take on that?
Yeah, there. it just sounds so silly.
Yeah.
It's such a silly conversation when you think about it. But yeah, kip away, do whatever you want. Yeah. I don't care. You know, I always tell people, look, I don't care about your problems. I have enough of my own.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do care about what you intend to do about your problems.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, what I'm saying is, I don't care what you do as long as you know why.
Right. Fair enough.
If you want to kip away. That's great. If you're getting into a place where you have pain, acknowledge the pain.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Rule number one, move away from pain. When you move away from pain, you're going to encounter discomfort. In discomfort, there's a difference there. Pain is harmful. Discomfort produces growth.
Yeah, true.
Subtle work difference. With the discomfort. Yeah, subtle difference. And this requires a level of awareness that when the athlete can develop it, can start to self-govern, they become autonomous.
True.
And this is what we should be empowering. Now, should there be a base level of strength? Yes. Mm-hmm. Can that be measured by number? No. There is no such thing as five strict pull-ups before a kipping pull-up. Mm-hmm. There is no number because it's not something that is measurable in that fashion, especially because we are also very different. That being said, there should be a prerequisite of movement strength.
Yeah.
This is, are you capable of moving throughout certain ranges of motion with control?
Yeah.
If you can do one, then you most likely have the base to do two, three, or add a swing or more speed or load or whatever it is that you're seeking.
Right.
So yes, prerequisite strength is a thing, but it's not number strength, it's movement strength.
Right. It's like less of a rigid construct. It's sort of like a more holistic view is what I'm
exactly.
What I'm yeah.
Exactly. And I just want to add here, and this is very normal, is we seek to understand through compartmentalizing information. Mm-hmm. And this is not how the body works.
Yeah, it's true. It's an interesting conundrum with studying the body is that
it is.
You can't learn the whole system by learning one small part of it. You have to kind of keep that holistic lens going.
Exactly. But now this is where hermeneutics, like, I don't know if you've ever heard of the hermeneutic circle, but in writing and in studying bodies of like text, you can take a piece of text and then you can break it down into its smallest components and then build it back up to get a greater understanding of that text.
Yeah.
The same thing happens with the body. You have to break it down into the smallest pieces, compartmentalize the information, see where it fits, and build it back up.
Yeah.
And when you build it back up, you'll have a greater understanding. And that's where you realize that in coaching and progressing somebody towards their goal, whether it's physical, mental, or emotional, it comes down to prioritizing the decisions you're making in the adaptation that you're seeking.
Right.
And it's that simple. And it's the rudder is very small. I mean, it feels like you're driving a car with a micro steering wheel. It's like, I don't know if we're going to get there, but those micro adjustments make a big difference down the road.
That's a good analogy. I love that. Cool. I want to shift gears into programming gymnastics. And so this is, you just see all different schools of thought here. And I think like programming is one of those conversations too, where there's no real right or wrong answer, but there's probably better options than others. Do you have rigid rules when you talk about programming in terms of like work rest, in terms of set reps and sets, volume, push, pull balance, periodization? What when you're first programming for someone, what are the first questions you start to look at to match them into their goals and kind of how a program is going to work for them?
Yeah, this may sound surprising, but I know nothing about it. That's no, I honestly, this is what I've realized over the last maybe 5, 6, 7 years is that I'm terrible at it. I should not be programming for anybody. So don't listen to me. I suck at that. There are people that know this stuff.
Yeah.
Read the books. Talk to the experts. I'm not your person.
Fair enough. Cool.
Yeah.
It's one of those things too, I guess.
Yeah, I'm not rigid.
Fair enough. That makes sense. I feel like if you follow the concepts that we have in like just barbell programming, it makes sense. I think you want to, you know, complementary muscle groups and all that stuff. And just like, I guess it's a different way of just a different stimulus. But
I mean, in the book itself, in Freestyle, I in the programming chapter, I had to lean on my friend Yami Tikkanen and the owner of the training plan to create the program. Yeah.
Yeah.
I know nothing. Yeah. talk to Yami. He's the boss. Read the books. The information is out there.
Yeah.
But if you want to learn about gymnastics programming, actually, right now, a good friend of mine, his name is Ruben Lopez. You can find him on Instagram, Chinso. He's the master of programming gymnastics. He's an Olympic gymnast, now launching a beautiful platform called WX Academy.
Oh, wow.
And there he will be sharing all progressions, gymnastics related. And cool. There will be very specific programming. Most of it is in Spanish at the moment, but it's coming in English soon as well.
That's exciting.
So yeah, I'll plug him. He's amazing.
Sounds good. Awesome. I want to shift gears a little bit into mobility. I feel like this is a roadblock that some athletes will, it's their obviously sticking point bottleneck when they're trying to progress through gymnastics. They might have strength of barbell. And what are the common themes you see with people that are in that category, specifically with shoulders? Is it overhead specifically? Is it external rotation? Is it a combination? And then how do you start to work those athletes through those problems?
Yeah, my observation is that overhead is what tends to suffer first.
Yeah.
But it has a lot to do with our ability to go into extension, mm-hmm. so behind our back.
Yeah.
And there being sometimes a lack of internal rotation at mm-hmm. the level of the head of the humerus, at the shoulder, a lack of mobility when it comes to your shoulder blade, your scapula. Mm-hmm. Anybody who's sitting in front of a computer, like I'm doing right now, can easily develop what would we call it, a dysfunction in scapular movement.
Yeah.
So very important to address that. Mm-hmm. For me, for example, through my gymnastics years, although you could say just by watching me that my shoulder mobility was good. Mm-hmm. In other words, my ability to move my shoulders was good.
Yeah,
a lot of the work that you do tends to be a little counterproductive at a spinal level, specifically mm-hmm. At your upper back, so thoracic spine.
Yeah,
my thoracic spine is very stiff. Thus, I experience.
I never would have guessed that.
You never would have guessed. Well, yeah, very stiff upper back, and this is very common in gymnasts.
Yeah,
especially male gymnasts.
Mm-hmm.
And that leads to shoulder problems, especially right. overhead.
Yeah.
And one of the ways to work through these shoulder problems is by developing basic stability, mm-hmm. doing a lot of isometric, eccentric contractions, meaning elongating mm-hmm. in the contraction, mobilizing the thoracic spine, doing spinal waves. Rotations are always very powerful.
Yeah.
And keeping it stupid simple, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the things that blows me away with gymnasts is just that, like, my biggest struggle is, like, if I have to carry too much muscle mass, I just can't increase my flexibility. And those guys are monsters. Like, the competitive gymnasts are just their shoulders and pecs and all over the place. And it's crazy how they still are able to move like that. But it makes sense that they have stiff T-spines. They're just like carrying much more mass. It's just that much more force they need to work through and really commitment, I think, to improve mobility. But the T-spine is that's like the most common thing you'll see.
Yeah. I mean, what you observe in gymnasts is that some are bigger than others. Of course, bodies come in different shapes, mm-hmm. but it comes down to the density of the muscle. Mm-hmm. It tends to be those who are very dense in musculature are the mm-hmm. ones that tend to be the stiffest.
Yeah.
And this I have no data on, but just from observation, it seems mm-hmm. like those who have great density in their musculature are the ones that tend to develop the greatest level of injuries. They become the most dramatic. Those who have a softer muscle, a less dense muscle, mm-hmm. are the ones who last a little longer, but they are unable to find the edge, the competitive edge when it comes to competing. But then there are some gymnasts that just are built different, like the Japanese gymnast, greatest of all time, Uchimura, he seems to have a perfect balance
mm-hmm.
in his anatomy and his ability to execute.
Yeah, that's wild. And I feel like hypertrophy is almost your enemy. It's like you need a little bit of muscle growth, obviously, to get your strength, but then the muscle mass is working against you, not only by body weight, but also less just extra tissue to get mobile.
Like, yeah, I think this is it's so complex. It's being strong enough to execute the task.
Yeah.
And the being strong enough can't be measured through a number, but rather through our capacity to move.
Right.
And our capacity to move is dependent on our ability to get into different shapes and then apply force correctly in order to move the body within that context.
Yeah, true enough.
And that may sound convoluted to those who are listening. It basically just means that you're able to do what is supposed to be done, and your body and your makeup influences that.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I agree. So one of I've just kind of following your content over the years, you've definitely evolved, I think, as a coach, in terms of like, I think some of your focus on your own training and your life and stuff like that. And one of the posts that stuck out to me was you made a post on emotional fitness, which I think is really important, especially like everyone's struggling a little bit with mental health issues, just getting out of a pandemic. Talk about what your definition of emotional fitness is and why it's important. How do we develop that?
Yeah, I think the first thing to state is that, you know, if you are somebody watching from the outside, whatever you think is happening is just not. Mm. So if I show up on YouTube and I'm showing you how to do something and it sounds like I have it figured out, I don't. I'm just trying to learn as I'm sharing, and I just happen to do it this way because that's what allows me to do it the best and allows me to understand the process. So that's the first thing to keep in mind, is that there are no masters. There are only students, and the students that are willing to embody being a student and share what they're learning are the ones that sometimes are considered masters.
Mm-hmm.
And with that comes a level of introspection that when you tap into it can be very painful. Mm-hmm. It's a very dark place. It's confusing. Yeah. It's convoluted. And there you will face your demons, basically. Right. All that which is messy.
Yeah.
And that's where you start to tap into what some would call the subconscious mind.
Mm-hmm.
And in the subconscious mind is your programming. That's what you're conditioned to do. And your conditioning influences you more than that which you do consciously.
For sure.
Thus accessing the subconscious mind, that which is your habitual self, mm-hmm. that which is you doing without noticing that you're doing. This is kind of like driving your car to a destination that you've been to before and then arriving and realizing, I don't even know how I got here. That's basically how we're living our lives.
Yeah, true.
Right?
Yeah.
Being able to tap into experiencing each moment requires us to talk about emotional intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And the word intelligence itself, intellect, is reading in between the lines. That's what it means.
Mm-hmm.
And what is reading in between the lines? Well, it's noticing the space that holds the mental concepts, that holds the reason why you're moving.
Right.
And the lens through which you experience life movement is through your emotions.
Yeah.
Like, your emotion is the lens through which you see the world.
Yeah, that's true.
And this is something that somebody like Ram Dass, who was a very prominent spiritual teacher, would use as an example. He would say, if you're driving in a car with a friend, and your car is has a flat tire, or there's a sound in the engine, as you're driving your car through the town that you're driving in, you're looking for a place to get it fixed, to get it repaired.
Yeah.
If you're driving the car, or the person that was with you is hungry, that person is looking for a pizza place, a place to eat. Thus, the same town that you both drove through
is
will
totally
be
different.
Experienced differently.
Yeah.
One is concerned about the engine. The other one is concerned about their food.
Right.
Their nutrition, their hunger.
Yeah.
Their emotional state is different. Thus, they see the world different.
I love that
so
analogy.
So in coaching and in athletic performance or performance period, in order to realize what we're doing or tap into the subconscious mind, our programming, we need to become aware of that which we are emotionally experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And what is an emotion? An emotion is an embodied feeling.
Mm-hmm.
A feeling is a mental concept that has a narrative associated to it. I am hungry.
Yeah.
I need to fix my car. I feel a sense of urgency. Otherwise, we're not going to get to our destination, or the car is going to break down and I'm going to be left behind. And then I have to pay for a hotel. You see that? That's how the brain sounds.
Yeah.
But that feeling, when it's embodied, it has a physiological expression.
Yeah.
And this is what the brain really does. The brain is constantly predicting what's going to happen next. and preparing the body to physiologically be ready to mm-hmm. act. And this is experienced through the emotion. In emotional fitness, what we can do is we can tap into that emotion, we can shift that emotion, and then shift the way or deliberately move in a way that is going to elicit a better outcome. And a better outcome is simply one that is closer to getting your most basic and desired needs met.
Right.
And that's what emotional fitness is. And my definition for emotional fitness is the ability to move into a state of being. This is mind, heart, and body.
Yeah.
That translates into purposeful action.
I love that. Very cool.
It's that simple.
Yeah. So then that I'm hearing parallels to meditation. Is it meditation? Is it breath work? Is it just awareness? How would you describe that process getting into that? What is there a label you put on that?
All of the above.
Yeah.
My encouragement to every single person listening is to express what is alive in you.
Mm-hmm.
What's alive in you right now? What are you feeling?
Yeah. Yeah.
You feeling yeah, shitty? Sure. Say, I feel shitty.
Yeah.
I am worried. I'm elated. I'm excited. Just say it.
It's true. There's so many like stigmas attached to actually speaking your true mind. Yeah. It's, mm-hmm. and it takes its toll. I think you hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah. It can be offensive. I mean, we saw it at the Oscars, you know, yeah. Chris Rock makes a joke. The timing is poor. Yeah. Things are hot and then bam.
Yeah. Literally.
Will
bam.
Smith is up there slapping him.
Yeah.
What happened? Well, there's a lot. It's convoluted. Yeah. It's emotional.
Yeah, it's true.
Right? Yeah. But here's the thing. Will Smith expressed violence. Chris Rock may have expressed disrespect.
Yeah.
But are they necessarily disrespectful people or violent people? No.
Yeah, probably not. Who knows? Right. Yeah.
You're not your behaviors.
Yeah.
You are the observer. And this goes to your question is it meditation? Yes, meditation is reflection. Are you mm-hmm. aware of your actions? Moreover, mm-hmm. are you aware that you're aware?
Yeah.
Can you observe the observer that you are and your participation in that? So that's one. The other one is breath work. What is breath work? Breath work is your ability to access that which is autonomous in you, that mm-hmm. which you don't have to think about moving like your heart, like your breath.
Yeah.
And actually use it to guide your physiology. So mm-hmm. breath work is one.
Yeah.
That's a small little rudder. That's a small little steering wheel. Then you have journaling. You can write things down. Why is journaling powerful? Well, it's powerful because you're having to literally channel that which is convoluted in your mind mm-hmm. and put it on paper in a way that makes some sense.
Yeah.
And the sense that you're making through that channel is through language. And the language is what you have kind of programmed into you since mm-hmm. you were a kid.
Yeah.
In addition to that, once you've done the written, then you can do the spoken. This is the verbal expression. This is, I'm going to state what is alive in me.
Yeah.
Right? And when you do that, immediately your environment, whether it's people or the place where you are, is going to give you some feedback.
Yeah.
That feedback is telling you whether that which you are or think you are right now, whether it's true or not.
Yeah.
And with that, you're able to make a decision.
Right.
And with that decision, you move, you act, you do something.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, damn, I have shoulder pain.
Yeah.
I feel frustrated. I feel limited. You say you feel limited. And then all of a sudden, somebody says, well, guess what? I'm a physical therapist. And this has a very simple solution. It happens all the time. Do this. Oh, shit. Great. Let me do that. You do that. And all of a sudden you see improvement.
Yeah.
When you have that, all of a sudden now you can get to the next level. And the next mm-hmm. level is your creative expression. This is you accessing the most authentic, original self.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you start to develop your true personality.
Yeah.
Your personal reality, if you want to call it that.
Peeling away those superficial layers and actually getting to your core. I love that.
Exactly. And if you look at athletes, those who are quote unquote the best also have a signature style.
True. Yeah.
Right? That they're there.
So true.
Yeah. So this is very, very important. And I think, I mean, Shaquille O'Neal, amazing career.
Yeah.
Terrible at
free throw saves.
Yeah. Right. But he comes out, he does all these commercials. He becomes like an entertainer. He gets kind of out of shape. And now if you see him, he's like in shape. I mean, he has a six pack again. He's like,
Yeah, it's wild.
Constantly evolving, but always rooted in the essence of his true self.
That's true. He does just strike you as somebody that's authentic, and he'll always speak his mind, no matter what, how many people are going to get offended by it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a good comparison.
And what does that do? Well, emotional fitness allows you to live in a constant state of adaptation where you're never done, but you're always empowered. You may be dissatisfied because you're like, not done yet.
Yeah.
But I feel empowered because... Yeah. This is who I truly am. And when you feel empowered and you act in a way where you know that you're never done, you produce the best results.
Yeah.
And that's amazing.
I love that.
Yeah.
Very cool. Carl, I want to segue into your own kind of personal habits. You've kind of talked a lot about the awareness. I assume that's a big part of your priorities and your own health. It's easy to get lost, I think, especially when you're a coach and other people rely on you. So you kind of can be pulled in a lot of different directions. What is at the top of the list of your health and fitness priorities these days? And what do your habits look like around those?
Yeah, I think at the top is relationships, having healthy relationships with myself and with others. So whatever is happening inside, that's the most important.
Yeah.
And as long as I can be working on that, then everything else starts to unfold. I would say the second one is my sleep. I actually wrote about this the other day, and just in my journal, I was thinking, what is the most important thing in my life? And I wrote sleep.
Amazing.
I just wrote, my sleep is the most important. And I thought, how silly, huh? That I think the most important part of my life is when I'm unconscious.
Yeah, it's but you can't take it for granted. It'll come back at you for sure.
But when I sleep, I'm a better version of myself.
Yeah.
So sleep is important. Plus, I am very in tune with that which I'm dreaming. I enjoy engaging with my dreams. They are very important to me.
Do you journal your dreams? Or?
I have. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You ever lucid dream?
I have too.
Really? Oh wow. Yeah. That was my goal for a while. I was trying to be able to do that and kept getting sidetracked with it.
It tends to happen on the second half of the night.
Right.
Huh. Yeah. So you can actually, one thing that I did, this was just an experiment, was to set an alarm at 3:50, 3:55, like right before 4. And then at that point, just set an alarm, a very gentle alarm, and then catch myself realizing, okay, I've kind of recovered my body. Now it's time to regenerate my mind.
Half awake state.
Yeah. And then dive into the dreaming and just try to stay with it. And at first it would just kind of slip away.
Yeah.
But eventually I started gaining some traction. Cool. It just started getting a little strange. So I kind of left it for a while, but it was insightful. During the pandemic, especially during the first, shelter in place, couple months, whatever that was, I dove into it deeply, and it was, it felt like I was living two parallel lives.
That's wild.
Yeah. Kind of weird, but there's a lot of insightful information that came to me there. I was able to make a lot of choices that are kind of shaping the direction of my career right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
There's probably no better way to tap into your subconscious is literally figure out what's going on in your dreams. I love that.
Yeah. I've also been hypnotized. So I think hypnosis is a very powerful way to do things. In fact, I used to be very scared of flying, and I fly for a living, basically. So I was hypnotized and able to fly since.
That's amazing. Cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Carl, has been a fantastic chat. I appreciate the time, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I really appreciate talking to you.
Cheers. All right, thanks for tuning in to this episode of Healthspan Academy, guys. We'll see you next time. Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you so much for supporting this channel. This has been a fun project. We're growing in viewership every single week, and we obviously couldn't do that without you. So thank you for continuing to tune in. I really hope you're getting value out of the programming and the content. Just wanted to give you a heads up. I've been working on a book on health and longevity the last couple of years, been collaborating with my colleague, Dr. Dan Vitale, who's an expert in the field as well. And we've basically just kind of summarized the literature, some of the techniques that we found really useful in the world of biohacking, what our exercise regimen looks like, what's, you know, cardio type stuff is going to help us live longer and healthier, mobility work, nutrition. We've covered the whole spectrum, everything that you can basically be in control of in your health and fitness kind of moving forward to help you live as healthily as possible for as long as possible. And it's available free for download. So if you click on the YouTube banner, you'll see a link to download the blueprint. It's also on our Instagram profile or on the website. You can click on fivepillarmethod.com/optimize to get your free copy of the book. And I hope you enjoy it. Hope you're keeping well. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.